Hey guys, welcome to the MC Anime Podcast.
We cover anime, geek culture, Japanese aesthetics, and Asian studies. We are a multi-fandom podcast, and you can expect to hear topics in your favorite hobby or fandom activity potentially. You can find MC Anime on Google Podcasts, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and YouTube. Also, please check out mcanimepodcast.com, our website. Furthermore, stay tuned in for another episode.
Hey guys, MC from MC Anime Podcast. Today with a special guest.
Sam, how are you doing today?
Doing good, brother. How about yourself?
So what is Samuel Chambers about and how you came to be and all that stuff?
So I can say like this. When I would say like 2 years ago, before everything that happened with animation and stuff like that, I used to do poetry, actually. I used to do that type of stuff, and I would go to a kava lounge and I would do stand up with that and do poetry on that behalf. But as I got older and I noticed that more things were happening in my life, I wanted to pivot from it and actually dive deeper into film. So one night I was going to a poetry slam thing, and out of nowhere I meet three people. Those three people got me, they told me to come with them and chill with them for a bit because they liked my work and stuff like that. I was like, all right, cool. After that, they told me about their backgrounds. I decided to team up with them, and I joined them in there and whatever they was doing. They was in film. One of them was in live action. The other two were in animation. And so now I decided to team up with them, you know, and like dive deeper with them. Three of them, but two of them with animation, because, you know, I like animation. And so now I've decided to team with them, get to know them. And now I am who I am today, being able to work on a project of my own. And it's just been a whirlwind of changes and things like that. So I would say that where I mostly got am in my life.
Gotcha. And where can they find you? Are there any plugins you want to put in right now at this time?
At the moment, yeah, you can reach me at Denver Thy Rager. This is on Instagram. So DenverThyRager. And that's on Instagram. And I also have a link dedicated to other places you can find me, especially the project I'm working on. And I believe I'll be in the, you'll be able to show that with your audience, I believe, on that end, on the link wise.
Yeah. And the plugin that you want to show, what does that project entail?
So the Timid Bunny, hold on 1 second, if you don't mind. 1 second. Yeah. Basically, this is what it is right here. This is one of the things that we got for the Timid Bunny. You can see it. The Timid Bunny is basically a project that I've been working on for a little while, for like, I believe like 8 months now. And we've just been working on the pre-development. That's about a story about a buddy named Tony. He's a track star looking to get back into the track and field industry. And his friends decided to betray him. And now he's in a situation where he's wondering if he should go back into it or not. And my job as the writer and director of the story is to tell how he'll be ascending and making sure that he'll possibly give it another try or not. So that's mostly the story about it.
Gotcha.
And right now it's a short film, and we're looking to make this thing possible and show it to the world. And I can say this, from the reason why I wrote that story, it was because my friend, he had passed away due to the pressures he had to deal with. You're considering trying to get back into the field. He wasn't in the track, but he did music. And at the moment, he decided to, end it himself, chose to end it himself. And now I look at my cousin and my sibling, and they're doing track. And I noticed that it takes a lot to like be able to do this if they wanted a higher level, because there's so many people trying to be number one, who wants to do this, who wants to do that. And so it really encouraged me to write a story about that and give them a platform so they can be like, hey, I'm a track star. I really want to do this. And I understand that they're going to be going through a lot. And I thought it'd be cool to write that story about them, about it. That makes
sense.
That definitely gives more interpretation of what you write and how you're doing it and what's behind it. So with today's episode, exploring animation's rich tapestry of storytelling and narratives, which is something that you actually can really relate to and really give a lot of insight on. So as a whole, storytelling is a process in which you take a mechanism, put it in a format for to follow the story format of what it is or you choose, but you incorporate the details of the character, what they're going through, the basic plot line, what it's about, that stuff. The narrative is the style in which the story is told. So there is different narratives, for example, first person, second person, and third person. But the thing is, there's so many other ways to overlap different perspectives, even the narrator or the main character or many characters. That's how the narrative could build to tell the story in a more enriching way.
And so with the last part, I would say, what makes you ask that question, if you don't mind me asking? Like, what, in a way? I was trying to figure out, like, the whole thing was about, like, the question. What was the question again, I should say?
Well, the title is Animation Switch Tapestry of Storytelling and Narratives. Animation. Exploring what the animation is about, storytelling, and how the narratives give the overall aspect of the story.
And so, yeah, I could tell you from experience about being able to write, I would say the biggest thing when it comes down to being able to write great stories and then and vocalize people's ideas on how to put them out, it's a lot. It's a lot that goes into it. It's a lot of things that when we're able to sit down and actually at the board or at the keyboard or the typewriter, we have to think about a bunch of things that can put in, that can go into so many things in life, like, you know, betrayal, heartbreak, suffering, and the good times, the bad. I mean, all it's a big, how should I say it?
It's a big circle that always is repeating and always is have different elements to include.
So no, that's the way to put it. That's a good way to put it. And then like a melting pot, you know, when especially like something like One Piece or something in the lines of Adventure Time and stuff like that. And those types of stories, they're able to convey such great ways of how people feel, how characters can relate to each other, how we can relate to such characters, the fact of how art imitates life. And I think one of the biggest things that I've come across when being able to write and stuff is explore who I am as a person, is to be able to cultivate a narrative within myself to be like, well, I could do this or I could do that. How I feel if someone did this to me and I decided to do something else. And it's big on so many levels in thinking. Biggest thing I should say is I enjoy the fact every day of being able to cultivate my skill, and not only cultivate skill, but hear other people's ideas on how to tell stories. And especially just continuously living this life of that I chose. And I think it's one of the beauties of animation and storytelling and film. So that's how I see it.
And the invoking elements that you put in a story kind of relates to what is the story about. And if you take, you know, a story like Avatar The Last Airbender, what does that story have to tell that's different from another one? When you really broke it down to, there's 100 years where the Avatar is missing. 100 years later, the Avatar comes back. But the thing is, the oppressive force and the antagonist is the Fire Nation that was developing over 100 years after the war, trying to take over, dominate, and colonize the world. So when you look at that story, it really invokes tension, desperate betrayal to catch up, to the point where how can they be stopped? So much time has passed, and what can we do as a small niche group to stop that effort? And mastering the different elements to be able to do that creates that rising action to what the end goal is.
So I think to answer your first question with how does it diverse, like how does it set itself apart? I think when we were younger, being able to watch that show,
yeah.
When on your first watch, it was kind of like, oh, wow, we got people with powers and stuff. They're throwing water, fire, earth, and all the other stuff. And we got Aang, Sokka, and Katara and stuff like that. I think it's just the fact that just the storytelling was so well captured and showing how, especially with a lot of people who enjoy Zuko's story, and they enjoyed how Sokka was able to grow as two young men, you know? And then there's Aang, who was trying to balance the fact that I gotta fight this big bad, and I'm trying to figure out, how did I get pulled into this mess? I didn't choose to be the Avatar. I just, like, it was put upon me that I was able to hold multiple abilities at once. And as I talk about Aang, I think one crucial thing I can say is about Zuko, the fact that it shows the path to being a better person. And I think that's one of the cool things I enjoyed while watching it. While when I was younger, it was like, oh, this dude used to be like a bad guy, now he's a good guy. But as we grow up as adults, we understand that we may have did some stuff in the past that we're not proud of. I'm not gonna say that I'm proud of the stuff I've done as I'm like 23 years old now. And so from the fact of seeing Zuko doing all this type of stuff at a teenage year, at the age of being a teenager, and now as an adult, he's able to see that. And as you know, they're still young adults, so they still have to go through stuff, but those crucial elements when we're possibly going through a breakup, possibly going through job loss, possibly going through a project, or possibly going through dealing with something that we're not referring to, is the fact that we're able to grow from it. The fact that we're not just going to stay in that moment and being like, hey, this is what I am, I'm just going to continue being it. No, you can actually change from that. And I think that was a cool way that Nickelodeon was able to project that as a TV series, an animated series where kids are watching it. It's kind of like how BoJack Horseman fell on Netflix. I think that's cool in the way they did. That's just a side tangent. But I think being able to show that humility, that chance of growth, was cool. And especially with Sokka, it's something that most people, like, you know, how people want to become leaders. People are the only people in their tribe and stuff, or feel as if they're the only person that's an adult. Not an adult, but like the man and societal roles and stuff like that. It's kind of crazy how he touched on so many topics. And I think the fact of bringing it back into the answering the question is the fact that when they dropped Avatar, it just felt like it's a livable place. It's a place where people, like, you can sit there and watch and see these young kids in their youth having to deal with war and having to find out, why is this happening, or can I make this happen, or is this the thing I'm doing is right or wrong? And I think that's what really sets our generation. Like, Christian, how old are you?
I'm only 25, so.
See, like 25, 23, and there's younger versions. There's like a generation that's younger than us that didn't get a chance to see that. So when you pull the generation that's coming forward, and in our generation, they're seeing this type of stuff, and we got to see this. And I'm not trying to shame nobody on the fact that, oh, our thing is better, or this, and that, on the guise of the generation we came from, because every generation has something to learn. And the fact that what Avatar was able to do that sets it apart is just the story and how they convey it. And nine times out of ten, I don't feel as if we don't have that in this generation.
Yes. With that Tadalasa, the mechanism in which it was told, the sense of responsibility, the duties to a country, the duty to a tribe, how do you balance destiny versus fate? Is your always fate bound, or do you have the choice at the end of the day to do something else? And the thing was the duality of right and wrong, but also when you're really spoken down to your commitment, to your dedication, do you actually want to do, and like the ultimate goal to do that? It's kind of how they match pace how to do that.
No, I felt that because I can say it from my point of view. Let's say with my project, when it came down to me feeling as if, like, you know, there's a lot of things that are in our communities where we're kind of like born into certain things, and then there's a chance of like breaking out of it. So say like a kid's like around violence and stuff like that, and he sees, like, let's go for that instance, like Zuko. In his way, he saw that we're the toughest, we're the strongest of all elements. We're the main ones taking names, kicking ass and taking names, taking territories and stuff, and making things happen. Now, with Aang's situation, he had to be chosen. He was chosen to do this thing, and it's kind of in his blood. I mean, as we see the whole Avatar series be more in-depth, more explained, is given that destiny, no, that the fate part of it is like, this is what you're going to do. But at the same time, Aang could have killed not Zuko, but Iroh. What's his name? Ozai. You could have killed Ozai, but he decided not to, because he felt that that's not right.
Forgiveness, redemption, all is really high. Because Avatar kept going back on personal dilemma, pacifist nature, but also using violence as a last resort. Getting to that point, if it really came down to it. But at the end, where's the alternative, if we had an alternative to even have?
Most definitely. Like, being able to have that choice in a way, because, yeah, fate is fate. You know, people going to say, like, oh, this is just what I'm born to do. This is what I'm going to be doing for the rest of my life. I don't believe that. I believe you should be able to have the choice to be like, hey, this is what you're going to be doing. As long as you continue on this path of making these things happen. And yeah, there's possibly some things that happened in your life that were possibly drawn in. You know, I don't know if like your religion based and stuff like that, but with everything that happens, it kind of has that choice to be like, do I believe in this thing? Believe in this God or this Buddha or whatever it is. I have the choice of being like, do I believe in this? Should I switch or should I just believe in myself? And I think one of the big things that circles around most of the stories that we write or we are presented is like, it's either you make the choices every single day to put your best foot forward, or is you're deciding to just take a seat and like take your seat in the back seat and just let life control you. And I think with Avatar, with fate and destiny, it goes hand in hand in a way. Because sometimes we want to just be like, be drove. And sometimes we want to be the ones taking lead.
Yeah. And the, you know, motifs of rebirth, reincarnated Avatar is kind of like very simple design. But the lineage of all the past and all the present connecting is kind of like, so it's not really a religious art. It's just more of a historical movement that had been established. But it's very vital to the story. But it's not anything tied to philosophy. It's not tied to a way of life. It's tied to other people having a similar responsibility, but they're all connected.
Yeah, I felt that. When I saw that, I see it as a butt. Like when Aang went to the Avatar state and stuff like that, and try to understand what's going on, not only with him, but the responsibilities he has. I see it as if, say, like a podcaster, right? There's many people before us, before you, that was doing podcasts. And just like me, there was many poets, there was many writers, and there was many filmmakers before me that take a seat in our minds and able to be like, hey, I did this. Now, it doesn't have to be how I did it, but since it's you, let's take the approach of how you would see it. And just as much as when we take these approaches to make these choices, I would say, yeah, I made these choices to, you know, make the decisions in life to be like, hey, I'm gonna do this or I'm gonna do this, and I'm gonna make sure that everything's in line. That's what I've seen from Avatar. It was a big counsel of saying, hey, this is what we got going on. I'm here to help you out just as much as they've helped me out. So I think that's one of the biggest things when it comes out to the things we want to do in life, is, are we willing to take heed to it, or are we just going to let it go? You know what I'm saying?
True.
And I also think that with Avatar, you have to have to keep in mind the world building is very simple, very spot on in its tension, in its climax, and setting up the different countries with the different tribes and nations, and how each tribe nation is divided, how they view themselves at that current moment, and what they used to view themselves as well before the Fire Nation came in. So keeping their sense of culture in a colonizing way, it's kind of what a big impact is too.
Yeah, that's what, like, when you say that, are you saying on the fact of the culture-wise, or is it just like the fact that the world building is so, so big and magnificent that it just feels like it's its own living place?
I wouldn't say the world building is so big. I feel like the world building is very specific to the tribes where they were at and the locations that we meet in specific areas. It's more regional demographics that really tell what each culture represents.
That's all for now.
Avatar did really well. The regional demographics was told in a very simplistic way, but yet convey what they were about.
Well, in that space, I would say, yeah, that the way you put it, I can agree with that, because especially with how we as people in our world, because you know how, you know, art imitates life. The fact that Avatar was able to showcase different nations doing their own things, especially how their characteristics are. Like Bossing say, is like we're structured. We're like we do this way, and we make things happen the way we want to. With the Water Nation, we're able to just flow. They're able to, like, you know, do our own thing, go with the currents. And then the Air Nation is just, hey, we're here, this is what we're doing, and then we're going to move accordingly. And I think that's the beautiful thing, especially with Fire Nation. We're just strong, headstrong. We're going to get things done, and we're going to push the limit. And I think that's a beautiful way that they constructed it. And it's kind of like, in a way, each nation is its own character. And they're talking to one another. They're commingling amongst each other, being able to show the contrast within each other. So,
true.
I think it's beautiful. I think it's beautiful how they decided to make what Avatar is. And I want to see more of it, because now it's just like they're in the Old Republic now and stuff like that with Korra and stuff. So I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it as a kid. I enjoyed it, and as an adult, I rewatched it with a new pair of eyes. And it's a breath of fresh air. Even though it's old, it's a nice breath of fresh air.
True. Another example of storytelling we can examine is Infinity Train. So what does Infinity Train set up in storytelling to portray a element of the fantastical constantly moving to place to place?
I can say this. When I had the first chance to see Infinity Train, I thought it was such a beautiful, it was something I didn't understand, because the way it moved so quickly. A lot of times when I'm reading comic books, I'm reading manga, I'm able to watch a show. Sometimes everything moves so quickly that we don't know who's who or what's what. But as we move on from the beginning to the middle and even to its end, it felt as if it touched on a lot of points of, like, being a teenager, having the fact that life is changing, people leave each other, the fact that we all have these emotions. We move too quickly. And it showed, and I forgot the character's name. I forgot her name. But regardless of the name, it's the character that goes through, because she goes through the fact of understanding that it's not all about her. And even though, yeah, the parents did say this and that to make her, like, believe in the things that they say they will follow through with, she also understands that things change. People aren't always as compliant or as truthful as they are. And with the Infinity Train, or with the multiple characters that are on that train, you're able to see their positions in life. They're able to see how they think, how they are able to maneuver themselves and want to be in, like, because when I first watched it, I thought it was so, it was just, I'm going to just say this. I really hate the fact that they took it off. I genuinely despise the fact that Warner Bros. Decided to take the Infinity Train down, because I saw on HBO Max. It wasn't on Cartoon Network, but it was on HBO Max. And sadly, if you would want to learn more about it, there's only certain videos that you can watch that really will possibly give you what you want. But 9 times out of 10, it was a great experience. It was a really great experience. I think I watched it in 2022. I did that. I'll have watched it. And the fact of it giving that much thought and depth, and it made you feel like every time I watched it, it hit something in me. And I feel like a lot of stories that do that really gets me going. Like One Piece, bro, that show really gets me going. And it's a beautiful way of conveying story and conveying of themes and showing what's a good story. It really shows what's a good story and what's not a good story. So I think with Infinity Train, it really was a beautiful thing that should have stayed, but for some reason had to go. And I don't like that. I don't appreciate it. Because that's what we need. That's what we need is our animation lovers. You know?
True. And that's the thing with Infinity Train, that the landscape in which it was developed on the train, constantly moving, constantly going to different places, it gave an exploration that would really give more depth to these one-off designs, the continuous designs, the settings in which these trains will travel. How would it convey a story of fantastical and whimsical to the watcher? That is what really sold the story of Expanded Train.
For real, just being able to, I'm gonna say this, when it comes down to animation, I really enjoy the idea of how creators are able to show the way the characters move, the art styles and stuff like that. I like animation more than live action, because with animation you can do anything. Like, you can draw shit that's like unbelievable, like unbelievably imaginable, and then just show how fluid it can be. Because with live action, yeah, you have the elements, you know, it's here, it's now, it's in the moment, and you can configure it. But it's just like the live, like I'm gonna say this, the Avatar, One Piece. I'm gonna say like this: I haven't watched the Avatar with Netflix. I haven't watched the One Piece with Netflix. What else I haven't watched? I haven't watched any of the. Well, I'm not gonna say I've watched any of them, but some of the stuff that they do with Disney, I don't even watch it. It's just not a key priority to me as like a film lover. And trust me, I love Quentin Tarantino. I like Martin Scorsese. I love La La Land. I love a lot of the live action shows that they got going on. But just something about animation that keeps making me come back to like Gravity Falls.
Yep, we did Gravity Falls episode. Actually.
Especially that. But yeah, Gravity Falls. My gym partner is a monkey. Teen Titans, not Teen Titans Go. I don't really watch Teen Titans Go, but I watch Teen Titans. I like that.
Yes, Teen Titans was the story that I rewatched, got me back into animation as a whole, and really was pivotal. So I rewatched it and rewatched other DC related anime titles. So, but Teen Titans will hold that special place because I grew up watching it, bits and pieces, never watched the full thing, and I watched it and not watching other stuff.
Yeah. And especially, I think, like, the whole Cartoon Network movement, the whole idea of just cartoons being cartoons, because 9 times out of 10, whenever you say animation, what do people give you? Like, when you hear about once in a while, you watch animation, you watch cartoons, like, you're a child.
And I hear on the perspective, I say this, cartoon is a demographic that's trying to teach you something or a very substantive plot. An animated series is one that goes into depth, has a lot of different elements, any age can enjoy it, and then I go to anime. That's how I divide animation. It's those three things. And then also an animated series is there's a serious fandom behind it that I don't really consider a cartoon anymore. I consider a fandom or an animated series. So like Paw Patrol. That cartoon. That is a cartoon. Or Doraemon being a Kid Moto style-esque anime, but still being very faith-bounded to a children demographic. That's kind of how I put up that. So yeah, so animation divide three different categories, and I just keep it at that. And now if it's just animated, but not only an animated series, that's just really a pure animation. So if it's like stop playing, or that's just pure animation right there. So, you know, if it's animated, it's not really drawn necessarily. You've done it another way. But one thing about animation that gives a power enriching culture to it, it's really what can happen. The story it can tell, the guidelines of what's told in, how it's presented, how it's built, and how it is giving to the watcher a sense of relating, connect to the characters, getting into the plot, and just really enjoying it for what entertainment gives us.
I felt that, you know, because 9 times out of 10, piggybacking off what you're saying with the cartoon animated series and the whole manga thing, I feel that more people should try it more than judge it. Because one thing about my ordeal with the film I'm working on, I really want to give more of a shine to it, because there's a lot of people that have like a real love for it, and manga is mostly taking more type. I would say anime is taking over more on the American side on it, because in Japan, even in Korea, they have their own literal niche on it, and it's beautiful, because like the way they show like the slice of life, they have all this other stuff like shonen. And they're able to convey stories that give off the feeling of like, this is an actual film. And I feel like for art in America, they're pushing away 2D way more than they should. Cause it's expensive. Don't get it twisted. It's expensive to do this type of shit. But the fact of being able to sit down and actually take the time and actually look at something like a live action show, like a movie, and then sit down and watch an animated film, like Kubo, like Coraline, like
Umbrella.
I want to say, because that's stop motion. Still on the artsy side, on the like draw, like clay and stuff. But regardless, it's the fact of being able to convey such stories, and that a lot of people aren't putting time towards it. It's so much 3D, it's so much this, and that's still animation. Don't get it twisted. I still like it. But where's the more films that are dedicated to, like the Ghibli films? What about like the One Piece, the One Piece stuff like that? I really like the Puss in Boots, DreamWorks, animation stuff like that. Like, we need more of those. We need more of that in the system. And maybe I'm just blind to it. There's probably I'm just like commercially looking at it, but that's the different thing too. Commercial wise, where is the new stories when it comes out to that even put out more? Because there's always Shrek. I'm not going to say Shrek, but the same IPs from Shrek. There was Puss in Boots. There's other stuff from like Home with Rihanna and all the other stuff that went down with that film. Yeah. And actually like Rhea, the bird movie.
Yeah.
It's just like, where is that? Where is that? Like, that one thing with Fender Robot, I think that's what it was. Yeah, like, yeah, that part too. Like, where is that? That's what Pixar too. That's what Pixar. But where's the other studios? Where are the other production companies besides Disney, besides DreamWorks, besides Sony? And I think Blue Sky? I think Blue Sky is, I think they discontinued that. But yeah. I just don't like
studios has been bought out. So, in mainstream to survive, it has been library catalogs being bought, mergings happen, acquisitions, and other elements that's really affected the animation studio market. Pixar went to Disney. DreamWorks went to Disney. Sony has all the Funimation networks, plus Crunchyroll networks, plan to buy more. So, and they already had Entiflex and other production companies already on the mix. So with that being said, today's age, the bigger companies is taking the foothold in our digital media because of the fact of transition of not being able to compete as a standalone studio or network, that kind of stuff. And one example of that was how many times a particular series was pitched 3 or 4 tries before it actually got syndicated was One Piece. There was several versions in which Oda would actually advise a resubmitting process and pretty much get denied. It took several chances for that even to occur to actually get published. And the version that they had was probably a version of Romance Dawn, but in a way that was more than a 5-year trajectory, they say. So with that being said, when you get into One Piece, there was one element that just mind-blowing in how it's perceived is the multiple narrative perspective. There are so many different narratives, so many different characters, and sometimes even just flashbacks and current events happen all at the same time, that everything is interwoven into that those narratives. That's why that is what we perceive is.
No, I agree with that. I generally agree with that due to the fact of me being like, I should have said it. Because I'm a big One Piece fan. I like it. Right now I'm on Egghead Island. And I can say one of my top favorite arcs would be have to be Impel Down, Alabasta, and then what is it called? And Wano. And I think one thing about Oda is that the guy really takes his time with his work. He's really dedicated to it. He just loves the fact that every time we see Luffy, it's just, I don't know, I get really warm-hearted towards this, because when I first watched One Piece, I was just like so, how should I say it.
Well, Luffy is drawn in a specific way. It doesn't wear an eye patch.
Yeah.
And there's been SBS moments where there has been an eye patch and one eye down. But like, the thing is, Oda drew him without an eye patch. He wanted to tell the adventures of a pirate that's not sticking to the traditional stereotypes of a pirate. Mm-hmm. To be free, a pirate to live among himself, to liberate others, to stand up for anything that they believe. Wanted to be a freedom fighter instead of a scoundrelous, greedy character wreaking havoc and chaos in a malice way. We do see that with the other pirates, but Straw Hats as a pirate crew portray independent freedom. They portray do what's right, but they also portray follow what you destined to be or you want to be. The dream mentality coming out, coming to fruition, coming to the forefront of what is based on their actions. And pretty much extreme loyalty to trust and building of a camaraderie. The
stigma? No. I forgot what the crew version word was.
Former crew. I got totally what it was. But yeah, the idea to form a crew to be part of family.
When you say that, I think that's one of the cool things about One Piece is just the way that when it comes down to being able to have a comp, like a crew like Luffy's crew with Straw Hats, it's just a continuous adventure. It's never just like a bland moment. It's always they're bouncing off each other. It's always they're feeling as if they're a real family. But also I understand that there's a structure to it, just like in Water 7. That was one of those times when, you know, when Usopp and Luffy had that brawl, and one had to understand that certain things need to be left behind and certain things need to be picked up. And I felt that in my moments in my lifetime when I had to understand that I'm the captain of my vessel. I have to understand that certain people are in my life and some people are out of my life. And some people are coming into my life and they're giving me more than what the person or the thing that was once there is not giving me something better. And was it a hard pill to swallow? Yeah, I'm not gonna deny that. It's not cool always having to deal with someone leaving or someone having the fact of being able to continuously moving forward, knowing that there's certain things that you wish you could continue on. But with One Piece, it's always something that brings a smile to my face. It's never a dull moment, well, sometimes, but like it gives you that feeling of like, I'm here for a journey and I'm here for a moment that will possibly go away, but that's okay. And I think that's the beauty of it. And that's how I see it though.
Yeah. The multiple narrative perspective that we see is very telling. The design, the characters. No character is a side character. They all are their own character. They all intermingle into the story at any present time. So if we're introduced to them, they fulfill a role. They're not just fellow characters. There's a lot of not fellow characters. There is, if you have like in the background, but the ones that we were introduced to and get a story told about them, they come back. So, and with the multiple events happening all at once time frame, gives a huge requisition of what is actually happening all around the world, all at any given time on a different island. This is happening on different, the news has been spreading around here, the reaction to the news across multiple islands that they visited. Basically, the current event is what's happening right now. That is pretty much the aspect of News Morgan and the government saying what actually happened, information leaking that the other world doesn't know, but are now getting access to a perspective that could or could not have happened the way it was told.
Yeah, you do have a point with that. And I think that's one thing that a lot of things happen. And I appreciate that. Like, I genuinely appreciate the fact that Oda was able to convey that with every moment that One Piece has been out. I mean, dude, One Piece is everywhere, especially in Americas. And it's quite a beautiful thing that a lot of things happen across the world of One Piece, and it's never a dull moment. Sometimes, but 9 times out of 10, it's just a continuous effort. And I think we need more stories like that. I think we need more moments in life where we're able to see that story convey not only in Japan's work, Korean work, out there work, but in our work, in everyone's work. Because 9 times out of 10, like, I don't think animation is dying. I just think the respect for it is.
Yeah.
And I think if we're able to put our best foot forward every time with it and actually make more content that's able to go to so many more people and not make it seem like cartoons is just a childlike thing, we'll be better off. That's how I see it though. I feel like the more we put out good stuff, just like we'll put out an Oppenheimer, just like we'll put out a Barbie movie, just like we'll put out a Quentin Tarantino, Pulp Fiction, we need those. Not just in short form, not just in, nothing wrong with short form, short films and stuff like that. And just on a series, just like a Breaking Bad or what is it called? A Sopranos. We need that. We should want, as animators, we should want shows like that, just not with characters flying around and stuff like that and just doing all these different stuff. Like, let's make serious works. And I think with the project that I'm working on and going forward, by pushing that envelope, if we're able to push that envelope forward, or we will be pushing the envelope forward, we'll be showing more sides of anime. And not just anime, but animation as a whole. And if we're able to push the envelope and gain more people to be like, oh, there's a Sopranos for this, or there's a Breaking Bad for that, and there's a moment of time when we're able to have like another Treasure Planet. But, you know, I just believe that we need more people that care about it more and want to put these different dramas and stuff like that within animation and not just make like a kid version, because animation is for adults too.
True. And what elements of Treasure Planet gives to you? What kind of elements it pulls from for you to admire it from afar and enjoy it?
It gives us that fresh light. It gives that adventurous, you know, it's an adventure movie. It's an action movie. And it got a little drama in it, but I just think the way that they did it was so profound. It stuck in my mind so much that I just couldn't give it up. I wish they was able to give another perspective of the characters besides the Hive, like a one, and especially with Atlantis, and especially like Meet the Robinsons. I think that's one of the most dopest aspects of having the animation go towards that, because that's like, I think that was my One Piece before One Piece was even made. And I think, when did Treasure Planet come out? I think One Piece was way there before.
Treasure Planet came in 2002, so One Piece was already established before Treasure Planet.
Yeah, so that, okay, well, I will say this then. Like, that was my One Piece at the moment, Treasure Planet. And then when One Piece came, when I started watching when I was like, what, 21 when I started watching One Piece, is when I started actually started feeling the trend. Yeah, being able to convey that and actually show how cool it could be to see something like that and then watch it and then knowing that this thing is an actual thing is actually beautiful. So
it does follow the single story narrative, which is actually not too bad. You actually tell that as a version. But the single story narrative is probably the common told narrative, but is the very much strongest form of narrative that can be told. Yes, it's used a lot, but when you really think about it in respect of one character and telling that narrative, it sometimes can create the entire story by itself based on that one story. So you have to really think, is this narrative worth watching? Because you're going to get that one version. So you have to make it more convincing. You have to make it more on pace, make it more connecting to the person watching it. You have to be more expressive, actually. More things to people to take on and admire from a distance, but on a screen that can appreciate.
No, I won't. Can you say the last word again?
Take a perspective that they appreciate and give to the audience something to they can attach themselves to.
Yeah, of course. Because I feel as if we're able to take more concern on our front as animation lovers and stuff like that. I think it's important that if we're wanting to make a big difference for it and actually shine more of a bigger light on it, it needs to be shown in the forefront. That's just for the kids. Well, I mean, yeah, we got kids to watch, we got adults to watch it, but the fact that if we're gonna push this thing and make it something worthwhile, you know, like my film The Timid Bunny and stuff like that, and show how animation can really be used, not just on a childlike level, but like on an adult level too. Like being able to use stuff like Adult Swim. Yeah, like Adult Swim, you know. With Primal, I think it was. That's one of the animated series that they have on there. They have another one that's coming out. I forgot what the name was. I saw the trailer for it, which was so dope. But getting back on topic, I think one of the things that we need to do more is focus on how can we make a bigger difference, especially in 2025. Like, I rarely see anything on when I watch, so I scroll through TikTok, but I sometimes watch TV. Where are the animated shows at? Where's the animated films at? Besides Disney, that's doing that. Besides Sony, who's doing that? DreamWorks, who's doing that? You know, where's the indie people making these stories up, pushing the envelope, wanting people to see how great animation can be? I don't see it. And that's what pisses me off the most. So, I don't know. I think that the way we could be heading could be better. And that may be just because, you know, I've been doing this for like 5 years. Like, I wanted to be in the entertainment industry. I've been doing this for 5 years, and seeing how people conduct themselves when it comes down to projects, it's just not fit. It's not fulfilling. It's really really sad. But I feel like I'm not. And again, no shade. You know, we're all people trying or looking to make a way for our projects to see a light of day, because, you know, Disney, they already got the audience. They already got that staple. Sony, DreamWorks, and all the other places that have animation, but we just need a better foothold, if that makes sense.
True. And, you know, the indie movement has been something that we had in years past, but maybe now it's more vital for them to start it back up and do their own project.
Because I think at the now it's like finding a team to get it done and people volunteering their time to get a project succeeded and actually published is now more difficult. It's not really pushing the envelope, it's more pushing out a series that's not maybe what they want to push out.
So I'll say it like this, and this is coming from my perspective so far when it comes down to seeing people's projects. It just, like I've told many people, like the conversation we're having right, we're about to have, it's just, I'm not seeing the business side being taken care of a lot better. When I see people wanting to make film and stuff, I love that. I love the fact that they're being creative. I love the fact that they're putting pen to paper, brush to board, and I enjoy that. But it's just like, everybody just doesn't want to be like salesy. Everybody doesn't want to be a marketer. No one wants to do you want to put on the business hat. They want to put the creative hat on. They don't want to take that off. They just want to be like, here's my work, boom. But it just, it's not giving. It's not making me happy knowing that I only saw it once and that's it. Like, what else are you doing? Like with a short film, people put that out and then is that sick? Like, you don't have merch for it? Like, you have an audience. You have people looking at your thing, but there's no lead up. There's no after fact. There's no, oh, we got this thing coming in. Here's this. Here's a Kickstarter for the whole film. Like, there's no, well, we got this brand with this brand. We got this with this. And trust me, I understand that a lot of people don't want to do all that. That's cool, but I want that. I want to showcase more people who are willing to take the time out because you made something that took probably a year. Years, months, days, it doesn't matter how long, but it took a lot of sweat, blood, and tears. And you're out here just being like, here, and that's it. It's kind of like lackluster. It's not pushing that envelope forward. And when I see that, and I see on YouTube, go to film festivals and stuff like that, or I just see it like a web series, I'm just like, okay, that's cool. But then they get mad when their thing is brought and then they're shelved. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't make sense to me. It doesn't make sense to me because you made this thing. And now you're like, well, why is this getting seen, not my stuff? Well, because they're putting in the work to put their stuff out there. Just like me and my project. It's not the fact that I care about animation. Yeah, I love the animation. I love it. I love the film industry, but I also enjoy the business side of it. I'm able to talk to this person. I'm able to talk to you. I'm able to talk to whoever I want to talk to and not only talk about myself, about my project, but the love of animation and love of film. Because let it be a day to tomorrow that we can't do this no more. Then what?
True. So as we wrap this up with this conversation, I think the biggest takeaway is that the industry needs more innovation. That innovation to tell a story, the innovation to lead us on narratives. Tell us the story and how the animation is portraying a mechanism for entertainment. Just not only entertainment, but let the fans have a way to enjoy it as an afterthought. They can still enjoy it. They can show off how they like it, that type of stuff.
I can say like this. When it comes down, like, when you say that, are we talking about the fact that somebody putting out a piece of work and just leaving it out there, seeing if it catches fire, or is like it's like in their portfolio?
The piece of work that's out there, and they'll actually make an impact with it in some way.
Well, and they're looking for impact, right?
Yes.
Well, I mean, if say like this, this podcast right here. You know that you like anime. You like animation. You like the fact of how everything is coming around and you want people to see this thing. And hopefully with the guests that you have on here, you would want them to feel a spark and be like, hey, I watched this this show with Mason and I liked it. Would you rather have someone on their behalf tell about it or just be able to be like, oh, I made a show and this guy did it and that's it?
No, I want people to spread more word about it. That's the point.
That part. And I believe when we want to make an impact, we need to put fire behind it. We need to put people that's willing to push it. So when people, I could like, and get, don't get it twisted. For people who want to just to make stuff and they have the budget for it and they have the endless amount of money to do it and they don't want, they just want it as their portfolio to move on to the next thing, cool. Make it, put it in your portfolio. It's just in your portfolio. That's cool. But if you're looking to make an impact on something and you want many people to see it, we need to have that idea of business on the front of, and I want to say the main front, but it just got to be there. Mm-hmm. It's got to be, what am I going to do? Who am I shipping this to? What am I going to put behind it? And is this thing going to be valuable in a couple of years? Is this going to be a merch thing going on? Is this thing going to be spreadable? Is it going to be infectious? Is it going to give you that rush of adrenaline and be like, yo, I love this shit. I love it. I love it to the ends of the earth. And I'm willing to share it. I don't care what you think about it, but I love it. And I would hope and I would want somebody to treat this podcast and my project as such. So when people say they want that impact and they feel like when they make their works, they're scared to sell it, they're scared to market it, they want to come out to sales, you got to. Because guess what? There's Disney out there. There's Warner Bros. There's all these other platforms that's vying for your attention. And 9 times out of 10, your work may be better than their work.
Yes.
So is it to get in the reach?
Yeah. So this wraps up Animation's rich tapestry of storytelling and narratives. Before we go, where they can find you and support you?
Yeah. If you're looking to see where I am, you can go on the Instagram. You can go on, what is it, Denver again, THY Rager, Denver Thy Rager. And then with my project, the Timid Bunny right here, that will be at Bento, like the Bento box, but bento.me/the Timid Bunny. I would say one time, bento.me/the Timid Bunny. It's just like that, the Timid Bunny, no spaces or anything like that.
Well, thank you for being here. This wraps up this episode, and it was a pleasure to have you.
Thank you, man. It was great to be here as well.
This concludes another episode of MC Anime Podcast. MC Anime Podcast is available on podcast directories like Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and YouTube. We also have our website at mcanimepodcast.com. If you want to directly support us, then follow Patreon blog MC Anime. Finally, if you want services for hire, then we're available on Fiverr for audio and video production, graphic design, idea consulting, and blog and article writing.